What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your whip in the ground. Till your body okay. Walk it hard and long. When you finish that,
the hip knocker.
Go down, go down, go down.
Before we get started, as you know, we hosted a very special episode live at the Brad O'Gill Centre in Dublin 1 to launch a 2024 Coca-Cola Thank You Fund. We're working with Coca-Cola this year to get the word out about their Thank You Fund and to encourage people to get their applications in by the deadline of May 24th. For 14 years, the Coca-Cola Thank You Fund has supported projects around Ireland that support vital programmes for young people aged 16 to 25 in communities like ours. This year, the fund will allocate $200,000 in grants to some much-needed community-based projects in Ireland and Northern Ireland, so it's well worth getting involved. You can go back now and listen to that episode if you haven't, or if you want to find out more about the fund and making an application, Google the Coca-Cola Thank You Fund. You'll see some lovely pictures of me and Calvin there on the website. Right, let's kick on.
It's me, COB.
It's me, Terry Flower.
And today we're joined by
Aaron McGregor. Did you like that, Terrence?
I did like that. I'm afraid to say her name. I said to Arden when we walked in. I can't say her name. Yeah.
And what did I say to you? Me ma would say, "Her name's not Arden." Right, say it with me. Erin.
Erin.
So Erin. Erin. Erin.
Arden.
Erin.
I can say, no, do you know what? I can say it, but it's a mouthful, isn't it? Like,
Erin.
I'm a handful. I'm a handful. Say Erin.
Erin.
There you go.
Erin.
Do you know when I met my Terry as well, he couldn't say it, and he used to just call me babe, and I'm like, that's because he can't say my name properly. But he was posh. He was from Selbridge, so he didn't put the D in it. So being called Erin, Erin, Terry called me Erin, and I was like, why is he saying that? And then Aaron a lot.
Arden.
Aaron, as in like the boy's name of Aaron. So it's Erin.
Erin.
Erin. Oh, I love it.
Mouthful. Can I call you Erin?
You have to ask me, ma. She'll go mad. Mag's there'll be like, her name is Erin. You can call me whatever you want.
Right, lovely. Calvin, have we any singers?
I personally don't have any, but I've a bit of a bone to pick with you, Erin. We've been sent this multiple times that you had this bit of a dilemma with house coats and dressing gowns.
It's a
house coat every day. Now, Calvin, are you a house coat or a dressing gown?
I am a house coat.
Are you?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to be a dressing gown. Now, if he says dressing gown...
Now, come on now.
House coat.
A house coat.
Do you know the amount of people that actually say dressing gown?
I know, it's shocking, isn't it?
That was like one of the very first ones we done on this podcast, and the uproar, everyone's like, are you for real and all?
I know. Yeah. And now, right, so obviously I have my own brand of house coats, so sometimes...
Shameless little plug there.
Imperfectionbyerin.com. No, right, but when I'm writing things up now, I'm like, it's a robe. I kind of feel like I'm gone posh now, because I feel like, I don't know, because I'm on Instagram, like, not everyone gets the word house coat.
Yeah.
Some people call it a morning a morning coat?
Morning coat, yeah. See, I'd switch her up with that as well. I'd call
it. Or a cigar. Who was it? Lisa Cannon on Ireland AM, smoking jacket. And I was like, I kind of like that, even though smoking's not cool. I think, what's your man that had all the women? What was
Hugh
his
Hefner.
Name? Yeah, he called it, you know, like the
Yeah,
velvet.
But he's smoking cigars and pipes and what have you. He's not smoking John Player Blue.
I know, but looked very posh, didn't it?
20 major in the gaff, in the little gaff coat.
Where does it even come from, I wonder?
I've no
look
idea.
That up. He used to wear that little smock years ago, I think. Was it? Or was because it was freezing in the house, probably they didn't have heating. It's the first thing I do when I go home, put the house coat on.
Yeah.
Does your ma do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Does your ma?
Lives in it. Yeah. Lives in it. But cooks a Sunday dinner in it.
The snuggies are out now. I have one of them at the gaff myself.
Yeah. The fluffy house coat. No, I kind of tried to do it a bit more sexy. Ooh. More, do you know? Yeah.
Yeah, more appealing.
Yeah, a little bit more that, like, because when you put the house coat on, it's kind of, it's nearly a bit, just for a bit of comfort, where I wanted women to put the house coats on and feel empowered and sexy. And each house coat is named after something, like, so say, strength. There's women who wore them and they were doing, like, IVF. Or I had one lady that was, like, on the front of the paper, she was doing chemo when she wore the strength house coat. So I wanted people to feel empowered when they wore their house coat, not just like, I don't feel great today.
Yeah.
But that's why I brought them out. But I had one that was called Love, and my ma's friend bought it. They'd be great now at supporting you, right? And she rings me. She says, I'm about to show me husband, I won't say his name, the house coat. He said, oh, come be up the stairs now. It's called, he knew it was called Love. And she said, I ran up downstairs and I put fucking strength on me straight away. He wasn't getting nothing off me. So loads of men really liked the Love one. So, few of them got a bit of loving with the Love House coat.
So, Camille, where can you get them, Erin?
Imperfectionbyerin.com. Do you like the phone voice?
Yeah. Is that, is that now for the old Instagram? You're a bit of a blogger, aren't you, Erin?
Bit of a flogger. Do you know what? I'll tell you where it comes from. I was listening to Calvin saying when he was at his Christmas party, somebody pulling him aside about his voice and not, he won't make it in engineering because of the way he talks. So years ago, I was a hairdresser, left school at 16, and I used to wear Sovereigns, the big spiky earrings, and the Reebok tracksuits, and the Scandi jackets, and the Paco, you know, Paco.
Papa Crumlin.
And the chewing gum. I was an original Hunzo. I was like, the Hunzo life chose me. I didn't choose it. And I used to get the bus into Grafton Street. I'd done my apprenticeship in there, and I had to take it all off. I had to take it all off before I went to work. And that's where I learned the phone voice. So it was a real elite salon, and we done like lots of celebrities' wives' hair, and I hadn't a clue who they were. And I remember one day being in there and I was doing this hair, blow drying the girls' hair, because as your apprenticeship, that's where you start. You'll start like the blow dries and all, right? So I'm drying her hair and I'm giving out about, it was 2.50 a sandwich, and I was on €50 a week. We're only been talking about the prices of things now, right? I was on €50 a week apprenticeship wage, and the sausage sandwich was 2.50. Right? And I was like, 2.50 and giving out bed. And I was going to Crete on my holidays. I was trying to save. I don't think I had Taylor at this time. Anyway, I was saving away and they were all laughing at me in the background. And I'm like, why are they laughing at me? Because I was a real like, had a, you know that attitude? Why are they laughing at me for? They're making a tick out of me. And I was like, why are they laughing? Anyway, I went in and he said, you don't know who she is. Like, she's going to the South of France. This person's, she was a wife of somebody who was like, at the time, the most famous person in Ireland, and I had no clue who she was. So she left me a big tip, I think it was like €20 or something. I was delighted with that, but I had no clue, and I was kind of unapologetically myself to the point. But then when I went into those circumstances, I had no choice but to switch it a little bit.
And were you asked to tone your accent down or the way you dressed, or did that naturally happen?
No, I was asked to take the jewellery off. I was definitely asked. And yeah, you would always, yeah, you would be kind of told, maybe not what way to talk, but you'd be told how to treat them. And then obviously you're surrounded by other people and they're all talking differently. So you kind of felt a little bit out of place.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like I was in Grafton Street and they were all real well spoken. And then when I went on to Dancing with the Stars, I suppose I was always able to hold myself. My ma kind of taught me that, like, even that I still say me ma, like years ago, we weren't allowed to say ma. Me ma would bait that into like, ma'am, where I'd still call her ma. Mm-hmm. But she always, I think now I look back and I appreciate me ma because she always wanted us to do better.
Yeah.
She wanted, like, me ma came from the flats. She was the fourth person in our house to buy a house.
Yeah.
She wanted us to do better. And when you have kids, that's all you want. You want your kids to like constantly be evolving. But like I was a little upstart, like I wanted to be like my friends, calling ma and doing everything they were doing. But I guess when I went into hairdressing, that's where I learned to do the phone voice and to behave a certain way in front of people.
Yeah, and that's why you can understand what your ma would have been saying to you back then, because even years ago, and even still probably today, like people say, like, let's say you're from Finglas, people say, oh, I'm from Glasnevin when they're trying to get a job. And I'd say it happens less nowadays with the accents and the dressing and stuff like that. But I'd say back then, you
I don't know about that.
I still think it's happening.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say it's happening as much.
But this is what we were talking about outside. It's nearly trendy to be like, do you know what I mean, from areas like this. And how many people are going around saying up the flats and all? And you're like, you've never bleeding stepped foot in a set of flats in your life.
That's one of my lines in the panto. It's like, up the flats. I think because of people like yous who are shown people out there that were so much more, there's so much potential in people in those working class areas that don't have the same chances as you know, people will say, oh, you have the same 24 hours in a day.
No, that's a lot of bollocks.
You don't, because nobody knows the traumas that they're facing at home, or the financial pressures, or the stigma that's attached to it. That's still hugely out there. And right now, so this is how I feel about it. It's cool for the big corporations to be seen, to let the flats in. Come on, oh, we're doing amazing. Is it really like that? Or are you just doing that because that's cool for you to do that?
Yeah.
Do you get me? 100%. It's cool now, but is that really, like, I remember doing Dancing with the Stars at the start. Like, I kind of knew I didn't really fit in. Like, everybody was really nice, but in the background, you could see things. I could feel it. Like, I remember doing a charity event, right? I was thinking about this today in the shower because I was like, what way is this podcast going to go? Because I get real nervous. I know I can hold conversations with people, right? But it's what people take from what I say and they write the most horriblest things, and that, the accent, no class, she looks like a man. It's always about me accent. And even when I'm trying, if I do like me phone voice, someone has something to say about that. If I do, because I don't think I'm a real, like, I don't have a real strong dub accent, but when I'm with my friends, that comes out.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I feel no matter what I do, sometimes it's never right.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
You can't win.
People are always going to pick at something though.
Yeah.
No matter what. Like.
Yeah. But I was in the shower today and I was like, remember being this on this charity thing for horses, right? It was polo. What's that? What's that
polo,
one?
Yeah.
Polo, right? Afraid of my life. And this is like a royal sport. Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm doing it. And I remember it was probably a really stupid question, right? It probably was. I was probably being a bit naive and being stupid. But I said to the girl, "Do you just leave your horses out here?" And she's like, yeah. And I was like, "Do they not get robbed?" Right? If you left something out in the flat.
Anywhere.
No, I'm not saying the flats, people from the flats are robbed, but I mean, that's a thing that you go, people not try and rob that. Like, that's something that I would have to worry about.
We were
right?
brought up that way. If you value that and you put a lock on it or you put it away, that was simple as that.
Right? Anyway, she didn't say that. She's like, no. And then later on that night, they were all like, it was over and we're all having a few drinks and there was a few of them standing around and she's like, start laughing. She's like, oh, she said, would they get robbed? And I was like, I knew they were having their little joke together. Mm. Do you know what I mean? To me, I was like, you're not supposed to worry about that stuff.
Well, I think that's a genuine question. Like,
so did I. Like, I ask genuine questions all the time and I'm like... Maybe I shouldn't say that.
Yeah. No, but I get what you're saying there, but I think that's a real working class question that, like, if there's somebody, like, I couldn't get over it in Thailand, so talking off air about Thailand and stuff. There's bikes just left sitting around with the keys in them everywhere. Cars left their keys just sitting in them. And I was like, isn't it mad no one just comes up and strokes them, like, because if you did that in town.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I know someone that, I know this is a stupid example, but I know somebody, right, that he took me mate's bike, he cycled to the chipper and he forgot about the bike and walked back with the field. And obviously they were like, bollocks, and he went back and the bike was gone and everyone was like, well, like, what do you think was going to happen? Of course. But no one was surprised or shocked or blamed anybody. They were like, look, if you see a bike that's there and it's unattended and it's not locked and it's left open, it's a good chance it's
going to probably put the horses in the stables and the stables is probably all locked.
Yeah.
But she could have said that to
me. If you value something, you're locked.
Yeah. I was being like, can you just leave your horses out here? Like, nobody come up and try and rob them. Because his horse is not dear. That's what I was thinking. I was like, horses are very dear. Like, would nobody just rob them? And then she kind of like, oh, as if like, I don't know. Anyway, interesting.
Arden, what we do with every guest, if you want to take us back to the start, where are you from? What was life like growing up for you?
That is always a really difficult question because I'm like, what was life? So I'm from Crumlin. My ma and dad is from Pierce Street and my dad's from Baggot Street, originally from England, and they moved to Crumlin when I was 4 years old. So what was life like? I mean, I always remember in Crumlin there was this real transition when I was becoming like a teenager, and there was a group of us that like start nearly congregating together at the shop. We called it the shop up. And we hung around at the field and it was getting bigger. But I nearly felt like I didn't really fit in. And I seen one of them a while ago at a 40th and we were talking and she was like, I see you now. And I'd be saying, go on, get them. And I was like, it's so funny because when I go into, let's just say Panto, right? So I'm on the Tree Olympia Panto every year. And you see them and they have this air of like self-belief and self-worth and like they encourage each other. Where I came from, Panto, drama school. Who does she think she is? So even if I wanted to do that as a kid, it was definitely not cool. And I remember saying that to this girl and she was like, you are always a little bit different. And I knew where she was going to go with this. And she's like, we're a little bit posh. I didn't think, like, I'm definitely not posh, but there was that definitely, I hate saying that I felt like I didn't fit in because I feel like we all say that, right? Mm. So like, does anyone ever feel like they fit in? But I definitely felt that I went to an Irish school. So everybody went to school together in like the local school. And I used to like get the bus up to an Irish school. So I nearly always felt that I was a little bit.
Like an outsider.
A little bit, yeah. And it was tough. It was tough growing up. Like there's a lot of people in the area now that I came from, like that aren't here anymore.
Mm.
you know, for whatever reasons, I come from that generation where it could have went either way for any of us, you know, and I kind of class myself as probably lucky. But yeah, it was definitely, it was amazing and it was wild, but it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy growing up in Crumlin. I don't think, looking back now, it's like, I remember doing like a lot of healing work on myself, right? And I remember, so they bring it into your like inner child and all this, right? And I always remember when I got like to be teenagers, I was like, if someone paid me €1 million, I wouldn't go back to that. I would never go back. Like it was, I don't know, it was tough.
Why do you feel that deep about your teenagers? Like €1 million and not go back?
Definitely didn't know who I was.
Yeah.
Definitely felt like I didn't fit in. Definitely had no like confidence in myself or like put myself in positions where I go, why would you do that to yourself? Why would you allow people to treat you like that? And kind of done that right up even into my 20s. Like I got pregnant at 18 and yeah, just I look back now and I kind of feel like, how did you let people treat you like that? Now, hey, don't get me wrong. I was a mad thing. But I definitely wasn't secure in myself.
Yeah.
Kind of only feel like I'm starting to get there now. And I remember like, I think we were in sin and probably went to Charlie's after it and I wasn't drinking. So I gave up drink in my 20s. About 24, 26, and it definitely wasn't cool. Meditation wasn't cool. Acting like that was not cool. I remember like, and I struggled in my 20s. I struggled like, how come they can all drink and party and I can't? And right now, we know that that's anxiety. But back then, we didn't have a word for that. I felt like I was a weirdo. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But now I know it was anxiety. And I remember being in Charlie's after it and saying something. People, they knew Aaron doesn't drink. It was a big thing back then. And them calling me the Betty Ford Clinic. And I was like, I didn't even know. We don't even think we had Google, but it was like an American, right? But that was it. Nowadays, it's not like that. But back then, like if you were any way different,
yeah.
If you were any way stepped outside that Patagonian jacket or that Scandi jacket or that dupe aftershave, you are out.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't be different.
Yeah. You mentioned having your first child at 18.
Yeah.
What was that like?
I hadn't a clue. Like literally. So I still can't cook, couldn't boil an egg, right?
And
I
same remember. Same as my ma, just trying her out there, ma, yeah.
Oh, very I bad.
Fucking hell.
Survived though. And I'm like, any fella I ever met in my whole life I went out with, they always cooked. And I'm like, look, pal. Look at me. Yeah. Look at me. Yeah. I'm dieting my whole life. Yeah. Who's going to go hungry for longer? And they'd always just cave and cook. So I always, and my dad's a great cook. So I always got someone to cook. But like, I remember having to get hold of like to chop the egg because it couldn't open the egg. Couldn't do nothing. I remember.
Chop the egg.
Chop, yeah. Yeah. I'm going to
think, open the egg. What is it? What?
Cracking egg.
Crack. Yeah. You take it off and you know, I couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
And I remember having her and like, again, I suppose at the time, not that it wasn't glorified. I hate to say that, but like we had come from the generation where like it was really wrong to have kids out of wedlock, right? And they were put in the like Magdalene homes. And there was a lot of shame at that time. But my generation, so like I'm 42, nearly 43, we were coming out of that. And it wasn't shameful anymore to have a child. And that's what's after happening. And we're going to deal with it. And so I was kind of coming into that generation, you know? So there was a bit more like my younger friends, like my age, we were all having babies. Do you know what I mean? Like, so it wasn't this big thing, but I remember being shell shocked, like absolutely shell shocked, not knowing how to mind this baby, not knowing how to like turn on a washing machine, just didn't know me arse from my elbow. And that was, I'm always really conscious of like new mas as well when I meet them, because it is so difficult to have a new baby.
Yeah.
And like people go, oh my God, you love them. And you do love them. But it is the hardest thing you'll ever go through in your life. Because your whole life, like I was like, you can't even go up the escalator in a shop. You have to wait on the lift with this buggy. Trying to get out the door. It's like, it's just a different world.
Every fine detail changes. Every small detail in your life changes. Yeah.
Everything. Even like just going into the shop, you have to open the boot. You have to get the buggy. Like it's just, and then obviously then my friends were still going out. They were still partying. And I had to go home to a baby.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I used to sit there. It was like Club M. And how old are you?
27. I am. He's 30.
40, yeah.
So what was your nightclub like? Barcode? Were you Barcode?
No, Sin.
Just after Barcode, yeah.
So
yeah.
Sin. Yeah. So our nightclubs would have been like JD's, Club M, Night L's, the Plaza. It was like 250 on a Sunday, right? So I used to sit there in my house coat, in my house coat with my hair and like all, we didn't really wear much makeup back then. That wasn't a thing. But we used to have like the false tan on us, right? And I'd be sitting there waiting. And my mum saying, I'd say, I have no babysitter. And she'd say, right, go on, go out. And I'd be gone out the door. So it kind of was difficult, but Taylor definitely shaped me. I'm quite ambitious. And I went back to work to that salon in Grafton Street. And I had a year left in my apprenticeship. And she was 3 months old. And I went back to finish it. And I went back to work to get my apprenticeship. So all of a sudden, I knew I had this person to look after. And that's been in me right from the time I've been really young. Like I went to work as a hairdresser when I was 16. But I remember going to work and having, nobody ever said that to me, like the financial that I had to help or anything like that. But I just always felt that need that it was my job to try and take the pressure off me mom and dad, because I was the eldest. Connor and Aoife were younger than me. So I felt like I wanted to like contribute to the house or like be able to buy my own clothes. I wasn't putting pressure on me mom and dad. Mm-hmm. So I always have that real protectiveness over my family and that loyalty to your own, to look after them. So when I had Taylor, that was there. You know, I kind of always felt from a young child a real responsibility to look after them. And that's what I did.
Yeah, it's common in that, like the older sister is basically a second ma in most houses.
Yeah.
Did I hear you saying there a few minutes ago that you stopped drinking in your 20s?
I stopped drinking in my 20s.
Did the baby have influence on you stopping drinking, or was it just the scene itself?
Again, I suppose when I look back now, it was like anxiety. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it was anxiety.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when people talk about like the fear, we didn't know what the fear was. And that was probably it. And then I was just like, it's not for me.
Mm.
And like, in one sense, having the fear and anxiety is actually a blessing, because I just don't do it now.
And have you not drank since your 20s?
When Harry was diagnosed, I drank again.
Right.
That was a really difficult time for me. Because it was like I couldn't express how I was feeling. It was like I had all this anger and rage inside me and like so heartbroken.
Mm.
Don't cry. Don't cry. And I knew the very first time that I said that he had like a sensory disorder on the television, live on the television, I knew that people were going to come for me, like come for me. And I wasn't strong enough for them to come for me. I was still very, very vulnerable. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
So it was like if I had a drink, it was like, I could express how I was feeling because I had it all pent up inside me.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
I was like, it was a tough time that was when Harry was diagnosed.
Mm.
But yeah, I'm a determined little fuck though. When I put something to my mind, I'm like, I'm going to do it. And yeah, I've never really looked back like that. Obviously that time. And then I was like, I can't actually do these hangovers. And the older you get, the worse the hangovers are. Both of you don't drink, right?
Neither of us, no.
Okay. Yeah.
Anymore. So we have drank. We know
we're not hangover.
We never decided to go on a bend or anything.
And you are a partier, right?
Yeah.
Am I right in saying that?
Yeah.
And are you sober long?
Yeah. I've had a couple of slips in between. I had a slip last year.
Okay.
And I would have been 2.5 years sober at that stage. And then I had a slip last year. So I'm nearly coming back up to a year
Amazing.
Again. But they're bound to happen.
Yeah.
On the journey.
And you know, I've seen some people that have had slips and never made it back. Do you know? And like some amazing people.
Mm.
And I've seen some amazing, amazing miracle stories. Like, especially like, I know we say our own, like the working class, like some of those stories, like the women from like even my ma and all, like they're just different.
Mm.
They're of a different breed. Like see me when I go out, I love sitting, I say the L ones, right? Call me mad, the L one. Even when she wasn't an L, but I still said the L one or the outfit. They have such powerful stories and such powerful journeys, and they had a heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know, like my man and dad were 24 when they had me and had a mortgage by, well, no, 22 when she had me. So they had a mortgage at about 24.
Mm.
Imagine having like a mortgage, one person working and a few kids.
Yeah.
Like they had it rough.
Yeah.
Like things were hard back then and you weren't allowed, like, see the way we're all openly talking about our issues.
That was unheard of.
Yeah. My, you would, don't tell the neighbours.
Yeah.
Like, I remember talking to this woman years ago and she was like, your honesty saves you. And I was like, I always grew up thinking that that was a really bad thing because I couldn't hold me piss. That's why I'm afraid to do podcasts and stuff, because I'm real honest and raw. And even though I'm opening up a little bit, there's huge parts of my story that I've never told anyone. There's huge parts of it because I know because of the situation I'm in that people already have a preconceived idea of who they think I am. And it doesn't matter what I say, they're like, do you get me?
Yeah.
So I am very protective over my story and who I am as a person because one, I know that there's not so many nice people out there. Two, I've got burnt by people that are supposed to be there to support you. And three, I'm still in that generation. Like, I'm not as young as you and I'm not as old as me ma. So I'm in that, like, don't tell people your business, but I have to tell them my business. It's that.
Yeah.
That funny edge.
Yeah.
We tried to get this going about 2 years ago and then recently tried to get it back up and running again. And you had said to us, you replied to the message and you said, I'm ready to talk now. Why now? What's changed?
Because I don't give a bollocks. That's why. Because I was so raw and vulnerable back then that if somebody had a said boo to me, I was ready to break. And you don't even realize, like, I look back at some of my videos or pictures of me from like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and I feel nothing but sadness for that. Because I look now and I go, I was actually broken. Like, my job as a mother was to protect my son. And I still, again, think we're only starting to come into this generation now where we speak about a child with a disability or a learning intellectual disability. Years ago, they were actually called mental defects. They were put into the homes. They were even, like, if you look at what's that program called, the midwives, a child born with a disability, even if the family wanted them, they were encouraged not to keep them. So I was so worried that, like, if I spoke about it, that he would be bullied or people would come at him and I wasn't strong enough. Where now I've kind of went, I've got stronger because I've had no choice. Do you know? I've had absolutely no choice but to pull myself up and go, you need to get your shit together. Like, I remember crying in Spain. I was after going through the airport and I was after doing a little video. I travelled on my own over to my family. My family was over on the yacht. Excuse me, fucking yacht. And I said, right, I'm going to go over. Terry was walking. He said, I'll follow you out. And I was right, I'm going over to the kids. I'm not letting Harry miss out. I'm going to go over to them. And I flew on my own and I done this video going through the airport where you get like, it's like assistance.
Yeah, and the fast pass.
The fast pass.
Yeah.
And I got a lot of backlash after it. And I cried. And I was like, people have this thing that like, oh, you have money, so you don't feel like, I don't know what they think. It's like, okay, my family look after Harry's therapies and they're really, really good and I'd absolutely be lost. But I was still on a beach in Mallorca and his sensory overload meant he had to leave. And okay, I had a lovely car that I could sit in with a driver, but I had to leave the beach because he couldn't tolerate it. It's like nothing, or like you can get a nanny. And I'm like, what? That, like, if I had a nanny, I don't have a nanny, by the way, but if I had a nanny, like, what would that, it's not going to take away my problems.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if money could fix things, Harry'd be talking by now.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it's like they think that, I don't know.
You said that nearly brushed past that a minute ago about having money and people think that you can't have any problems. That's so common, that is. You see, any celebrity or anybody with money comes out about struggling mentally and people are all over, oh, struggling mentally with this amount in your bank or struggling mentally. It's like, well, because of money sitting in the bank, that means nothing in the world can bother me.
So obviously money makes things easier.
Yeah, it can fix
everybody,
yeah.
Right? Because the most stress that anyone is ever under is financial,
yeah.
Right? We all know that. We come from working class where our ma's and dad's had to scrape by, yeah? We didn't get the things that we wanted. I didn't have like amazing things growing up because everything went on bills and mortgages. But when you have a few bob then, you realise that it doesn't solve everything. And there's things that money can't buy, you know? And it buys you nice things, but it can't. But I think the difference with being a working class person, you nearly feel bad. You nearly feel bad for doing good. Nearly like, where'd you get this? Oh, just pennies, hon. Where like you don't see people with a few bob feeling bad for having a few bob. Do you get me?
Yeah.
Where it's nearly like, and it comes back to that, like if your ma will probably tell you this, if you got something new, you never really said that was new or because you didn't want people to begrudge you. You know, if you got the neighbour's got a new car, look, oh, she's got a new car. Who does she think she is? I like to think we might be changing a little bit from that. But I think sometimes that mentality. People say it's an Irish thing. I don't know. Would you?
Yeah, like, I know where you're coming from, and I think we are kind of changing. And I think, see, you don't want to come across as like a bragger, because as you said, it's all like who do
they think they are. Well, hold on, right? Bragger, right? Where is that? Like, I'm telling you, right? Why shouldn't we be able to turn around and say, do you know what? Here's fellas from the working class who everyone told was no good, wouldn't finish school, wouldn't become anything, was nothing but trouble. The world was against them. They didn't have any support. There was no real encouragement in these. You got a job. And these people are coming from the ashes, showing that they are somebody and they can be somebody. Why shouldn't they be celebrated? Mm. Why shouldn't they be allowed back?
Yeah.
That's not a negative thing. Mm. It's only because we see it as a negative thing.
Yeah.
Like in America, it's not a negative thing.
That's the example I was going to give. And like we've talked about this before. If you've seen someone who started professional boxing in Ireland, and after that first fight, you say, like, what's next for you? And you say, I'm going to be a world champion. Everyone's like, who the fuck's your man think he is? You had one fight. Whereas every American is like, yeah, hopefully that's soon. Well done, pal.
Yeah.
But I think that's where that insecurity comes in us. It's that, like, don't say you're really good. Or, like, people would say to me, so, Erin, tell, like, I'd done an interview and they were like, so what would you like me to put you down as? And I was like, what? Like, who am I? I don't, you know, where I see other people maybe saying, I'm a singer-songwriter, you know, so, where I can't, I feel real uncomfortable.
Mm.
I feel uncomfortable selling myself,
mm.
if that makes sense.
We only had this conversation the other week. Somebody says to me, what do you do? And I deal with the podcast as my job. And I go, it's like a radio. I talk to people. I don't know what to say. I don't want to say a podcast or I don't. There's like certain terms that you just don't like to say.
But I have seen people who do less and like have the right. It's like this dialect that they have. It's like, I'm do. And you're like, I don't know whether it's because we're afraid. And the truth is, I really believe it's because there's classes in this country. I believe that. We look down on working class people still.
Yeah. I think it's a working class thing, and it's the fact that we're all here. We're all on the bottom.
Yeah.
We're all on the bottom together. And that's grand. We can all go through life with that. And the second someone starts to rise above that, you're like, hang on, you're not allowed out, mate, because we're not allowed to get out of this. So you're not allowed to get out of this. We're all competing together. You better pull yourself back in here.
But I definitely think it comes from the mentality of the higher ups. They don't want us to know that we can climb. They don't want us to know that we can do better. And instead of being around people who encourage you to be better, we've all had that fear that if one person does good, we're going to be left behind, yeah. and we're going to have nothing. And instead of being like, do you know what? When one of us go to war, we all go to war.
Yeah.
And I'm going to bring you with me. I'm going to bring you with me. And I think that's the mentality that people are forgetting. And I don't know whether it's because I'd go a bit deep now here on this, right? Because I love getting into things and I'm like, oh, I
you
wonder.
You came to the right place.
I wonder, is it because like it's in our DNA? Like the English came over and they took us over and they kept us down. And if one, like years ago, am I right when I say like that, if one Irish person went around and collected all the money for the land, that person left. And they were now on the English side.
Yeah, they took the soup.
Right? So that mentality of, well, they're going to leave us now. Instead of being like, no, we're opening the gates. Like, we're the generation now who's going to open the gates for other people to see what they're capable of. And I see that in the younger generation. I see some of the girls now on like Instagram and they're flying.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we should be supporting that. Do you know what I mean? Instead of feeling like we're taken or who do you think you are? You're right. Show them what we're made of.
Yeah.
That's just how I feel about it.
It's
taken me a long time, Terry, to feel like that.
Yeah.
It's taken me a long time to feel like that.
I always feel like there was so much potential in working class areas as well, though, but it's kind of nearly stuck with football and boxing. So people didn't really see other avenues to grow or see other opportunities to climb the ladder. So they're just kind of forced into them boxes. And then even by the time they get to an age where they want to make it out or they have a dream of doing something, they probably already have taken the wrong path as well because of circumstances and because of environment. So it's almost like, and you mentioned social classes there, there'll always be social classes. I remember being so oblivious a few years ago and I said to somebody, why is there social classes? Why were we born working class and then just the middle class and the upper class? And someone said to me, I just thought it was brilliant. They said, well, if there was no working class people out there, who would clean the toilets in the Dáil? Who would do this and who would do that? And gave a few examples of things. And it was like, that actually makes so much sense. If we were all on an equal pay or an equal opportunity of living, so you'd never have a cleaner, let's say, because that's a working class job, or you'd never have. Do you know what
I think
I'm saying?
It's more, I think the problem there is more the prejudice. Mm. So people looking down on the people who, like, I have a girl that helps me, and I swear to God, right, she's not my cleaner. She runs my life. Like, I do, it's like so American. I'm like, no, they'll probably rip the piss out of me when I say this, right? And there'll probably be a million comments, who does she think she is? But I'm like, she's my house manager. Mm. And I do that for her out of respect. But it took me years to even get a cleaner because I felt like, one, I should be able to do it. Two, who do I think I am having a cleaner? Instead of having the mentality of, I'm actually in a position now to offer other people employment. Mm. I'm actually offering someone employment. Yeah. How is that a bad thing? Mm. That's a great thing. Do you know, but definitely, like that afraid to move up and as if like having a cleaner, like as if she's lower, a lower class. Are you winding me up? I couldn't live without her. I say to Terry, I'd rather have nothing in my wardrobe. I'd rather go without and keep her than you're going first before she is.
Yeah. No, I definitely hear you on it. Where were we at? I think we're going on in a mad time.
Did I? Sorry. That's me.
If you're all right talking about it, Aaron, you mentioned Harry and his condition. Do you want to go into that a bit? Give us a bit of background there.
So Harry is the most amazing person in the whole wide world. He is 7 and a half and he has autism, non-verbal with sensory issues and an intellectual disability. It's the first time I've said all that out as one.
So from an outsider, I know Terrence will have a more personal experience than I would, but what was it like? When did you start to notice signs that Harry was different?
I hadn't a clue. So, like I said, in my 20s, didn't make the right choices of men. I was single for a few years and met Terry in Vegas at a fight in my 30s and knew from the moment I met him that he was the one, as corny as that sounds. Plus, I was after doing a healing retreat, so I was all hippie and zenned out. And I didn't care, he didn't drive at the time. And I was like, oh, all the material things are gone. So I was like, his soul is so cute, right? Anyway, his soul is so cute, but that's why, right? I was meant to meet him at that time. And everything was going like really well. And I wanted to get pregnant. And after Taylor, I swore I was never having any more kids. Like, I was actually engaged to be married at one point to somebody else, not Terry. Mm-hmm. And that, again, is privileged information. And when I met Terry, I knew I wanted to have babies with him. So I had Harry and he was literally, I nearly died after I gave birth to him. My birth was really easy. I didn't take any like epidural or anything. I'm proud of that. Go on, the Dublin women. And it was easy enough birth. And then they couldn't get the placenta out and I was bleeding and they had to rush me up to theatre. And I could hear them saying, we need to get the resus table ready for her. I was like spaced out at this stage. They were giving me loads of drugs. So I had no clue. Came back down, was put in like, it's a high dependency unit and they let Terry stay in. And they had to like sellotape my arm because they couldn't get veins anymore because they were working on me that hard that my veins, obviously, they just couldn't get whatever. They had to give me blood, I think, was what it was at this stage. And the girl was like, you're really sick, Aaron. And I said, Terry, did you know I was really sick? He said, no, because you're grey your whole pregnancy. I was really sick on Harry. So went home, had this beautiful baby, but he was quite a crier. But Taylor was colic. So he had reflux and colic. So I didn't think anything of it. And I literally sat with him on my bib and not on my chest. I didn't breastfeed for, I'd say, about 9 months. I was obsessed. Like, this child was my soulmate. When I had him, it was like the piece to my puzzle was just, it was like I was where I was supposed to be. I fell in love. I had this beautiful baby. Terry is the most amazing stepdad to Taylor. They get on really well and still like, he's like our best friend. She tells him more than she tells me. She goes to him for advice. Everything just felt right. I didn't notice anything. And I got a text message. It's real weird, right? Because it was like this, I can't explain it because it was like my head and my heart were two different. I found myself asking questions like in the question. Some kids talking in there. But it was like, I asked a question, but I didn't have any I think they would call that a disassociation. Mm. I'd know, like, I was asking it, but I didn't feel it. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
It was, I've never experienced it before and I haven't experienced it after. So somewhere I'd say, on a subconscious level, something was making me ask that. I didn't know what it was.
So you were asking a question, but your brain had no evidence of why you asked the question.
Yeah, and it was like it came out, but I didn't. It wasn't like this thing going on where it's like, Jesus Christ, why is he not? None of that, right? So it must have been a subconscious level. Anyway, I got a text message one day, a big long one, and my legs went from underneath me. And I was like, we're all really worried. We've been trying to tell you so many different times. I went to write this text message and I don't want to hurt you. My ma's tried to say it. We're all a bit worried. I don't even, like even talking about it, everything just went real blurry. It was real weird. Everything went real blurry. And I was in my apartment at the time and I sat down. And here I was. I'm not going to tell Terry, because if Terry knows that she said that to me, he'll be fighting with her, saying the cheek of her saying that, right? So I Googled autism and I saw what I know now is stimming, a child stimming. Does your brother stim, right? Do you ever get those things on Facebook where it's like, can you see the horse in a picture of a dog? And you're like, can't see the horse. And then you see the horse and you can't not see the horse. Mm. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I couldn't not see the horse. Mm. I was like, how did I not see that? It was like someone just went, shht. And I was like, how did I not see that? And the fact that he cried as a baby, or any time I went anywhere. Like, I remember going to Funderland and my brother hired out the whole Funderland. And we got in and I was like, why is it always my baby? And I hid in the toilet with him for a full hour because he couldn't settle. But I just thought he was after waking up from a nap. Or remember my ma trying to bring him somewhere to a communion. And she's like, he wouldn't go in. He just wouldn't go in. I had to bring him home. I just thought, why? I just thought he was happy in his own house. Mm. Do you ever be like, my bleeding child.
Yeah.
It's always my child getting pulled up by the skill. But still had no idea. And I remember going down to, I was hysterical, rang the doctor. They didn't ring me back. I went down to the Oak County. It's like the community nurse. And I went in, I was hysterical. I was like, I think my child has autism. I didn't know what autism was. Like, I had that preconceived idea that like he was going to have no feelings. He wouldn't know what love was and he wouldn't love me. That's all I kept. I was like, do you think he knows he loves me? Does he know that I love him? Does he know? Like that was, I used to lie in bed thinking, saying to me, Ma, do you think Harry knows that I love him? Because I just loved him so much. And I was like, does he know that? Like I was so scared to think that like he was going to be lost with these no feelings. Because I had no idea. I literally didn't know what it was. And I went into the girl and she was an older woman. I was like, I need to see the community nurse, please. I think my child is autistic. Somebody has to help me. I need to talk. I just needed somebody to talk to say, it's going to be all right. And I remember the girl going to me, were you on Dancing with the Stars? I was like, yeah, I was on Dancing with the Stars. And I remember, he wasn't sleeping. So Harry didn't sleep for the 4 or 7 years. So I used to do Dancing with the Stars and he did not. So when I say he didn't sleep, he did not. There was another sign that I didn't know about. With all these little signs, the not sleeping, the fussy eating, all these not liking the crowds. But again, none of that made sense. So I went into the community nurse and she said, the girl behind the reception said, she can't see you. And I remember just didn't know where to turn. I didn't. Where did I go? What did I do? And I think I got an appointment with the community nurse and they were like, oh, we can't really tell. And I got a private specialist at the time, Professor MacDonald. He's still under her actually now. And I went to see her. And it was real funny, right? Because she asked me all these questions. Does he look at you? And I'm like, yeah, he does. And Terry's like, he doesn't, Erin. He was answering questions that it's like he saw things that I didn't.
Mm.
I was nearly expecting it to be the other way, that I was going to go in and say, no, he does this, 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 and this. Where Terry saw it, like when I said it to Terry 2 days after the text message came in, probably a day because I can't hold it that long. Like I if something happened, like I'm one of those people that I carry the pain on my face. So like I wouldn't be one of those clever people or cunning people where I'd be able to hold something. It has to come out. So I probably lasted about 24 hours and he says to me, yeah, I know. It's like he knew. He didn't say, yeah, I knew about autism, because he didn't, but he knew there was something as well. I don't know whether anyone had said it or, but he would start saying things like, he's not looking at you. Or, and I remember saying to me, what do you want me to tell you? And I was like, just the truth. I want someone to tell me the truth. And she's like, okay, so he's not looking at you. He's not making eye contact. He's looking around your face. And from what I can see now, it looks like he... She didn't say has autism or is autistic. She, because she couldn't give me an official diagnosis, because there's a team of people that has to assess a child to see. So a speech therapist, a behavioural therapist, an occupational therapist and a psychologist. So she referred us to a clinic that had all of these things. And she said, the reason I'm referring you to this clinic is because they have the treatments that he may need. So this would have been the assessment, and it's called an assessment of needs, which technically and legally the government and the HSC is supposed to do that within 3 months of a child applying for this. There's a waiting list of up to 8 years now. We were obviously lucky to be in a financial, and I hate even saying that, we're lucky to be in a financial, like there should be funding for everybody. It shouldn't be a thing, but unfortunately it is a thing. But I remember feeling like it was nearly my fault, like not my fault, but it was like, I was after getting me happy ever after. I was after getting the fella. I was after getting the baby, like all those years in my 20s and 30s trying to find myself, like doing healing work and this little bundle of a soulmate. And I was like, is God trying to punish me? And I know that sounds really stupid, but I think every parent goes through a stage where they go, is it my fault? Did I do something wrong? Could I have done something better? And I guess that's because I had very, very little awareness at the time. And I suppose it's very scary because you don't know what's ahead of you. You really don't know what's ahead of you, and you're sleep deprived and you're going to these appointments and you're so overwhelmed with your own emotions. And I remember being on the television and I used the word grief and I got annihilated. It was actually a psychologist who I sat like you two over there, and it was me and Terry, and she was here and she was like, I would really like to work with you too. So when he was officially diagnosed at 2 and 7 months after the assessments, it was on World Autism Day that he was officially diagnosed, and we sat there. But we knew it. I knew it from that text message. I knew from the minute I researched it, I knew. And she said, I'd like to work with you. But we were like, out here, good luck, bye. I didn't say that, but we were like, oh yeah. And we walked out, and I guess I look back now and I'm like a shell of the person I was. I'm a real, I like to call it grit. Have that grit in me. I'm going to do something. I'm going to, and I'd walk like a walker. She won't outwalk me. My brother will say to me, pound for pound, second best walker in the house. Because I will walk, right? I have a really, and I'm proud of that. But I knew this one, I couldn't outwalk. And I was so emotionally scared for him. And I was so brokenhearted for what may lay ahead for him. People would say things to me like, you still love me, still the same child. And I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? It's because I love him. I love him so much that I don't want anything bad ever to happen to him. I don't want him to suffer. I do not want him to suffer in any way, shape or form. If you have kids, all you want is for the best for them. You want to protect them. You want them. Why would you even think that, like, first of all, I can't change him and I never would want to change him. But if I could take away his difficulties, I'm not ashamed to say I take them. I would give my vice so he could have his.
Mm-hmm.
Would I do it? Of course I would. Do you think I want to him to not be able to like walk into a supermarket and it's too overwhelming, or to pee his pants because he's scared of the crowd? I don't want that for him. He's such an amazing person, and he has taught me, I truly believe he was sent to me because he has made me stop people pleasing. I don't have time for bullshit anymore. I've cut so many people out of my life. I'm like, I don't have time. But I was so scared and I was so worried of the future. So like initially when he was diagnosed, I was like, okay, he's going to go to mainstream school and nobody's going to know. And because if people know, he could be bullied. That was my main thought. I didn't want him to be bullied, because if you're anyway different in school, in my generation, you got bullied. So that was like, I couldn't say it, because I thought I'm going to protect him, I'm going to mind him, and nobody's going to know. And then as time went on, it was starting to look like it was a little bit more severe. So they would have classed him on the more severe end of things. And people found that difficult because he didn't really have behavioural issues. People associate autism with behavioural issues. I'm not sure, has your brother got behavioural issues?
He is a little bollocks.
Yeah, like, he does, yeah. Depends on what way you want to look at it. I wouldn't say he's aggressive.
Yeah.
I think, sorry if I'm cutting across, I think your brother is very stereotypical of a little boy. And from being in the house with him, and if no one told you he had autism, you'd know he's just that. They're always up to mischief. And I got that with his brother. And I remember thinking, like, this fella's a little bastard. Like, you know what I mean? And he's going to, and I think he knows he can get away with murder as well.
100%. Yeah.
And, yeah. He's dog-wide. Like
this one, I mean, he's up to mischief.
Harry would buy and sell you. I'd say, Love Needs No Words is the logo on my jumpers, right? And I swear to God, he doesn't need any words because he knows exactly how to get. He's a charmer.
Mm. Yeah.
As a child from that, they just know because they have to use the instincts. We have our vices. They don't have that. So they use all the other skills, all the manipulating skills. They fine tune them.
Yeah. I have an example with his brother and it's exactly that. I think it was one of the first times I was in his man's house and he came over to me and he wanted to sit on my lap. And everyone's like, ah, look, he's had a taken tea and all. And I was like, ah, yeah. And there was a bottle of hand sanitizer on the windowsill and he was squirting it all on me. Remember, Terrence? And I remember thinking, like, what do I do here? Can I give out? Or I remember thinking, like, is he for fucking real? But he knew. He was he got a good thrill out of that. And I remember thinking, you know what you're fucking doing there, you little bastard.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking to Terrence as well. I was like, you know he knew. And Terrence was like, yeah, no, he is. He's just a little, he's just a young fella. He's just what they do.
But you know what as well? Like, so I just said behavioural issues there and Harry has a behavioural therapist and it's the best thing that ever happened to us, right? And we always view behavioural issues as a negative thing, where it's not. So Harry actually does have behavioural issues and he can get aggressive and he can self-harm and we went through an awful lot. That's because he's not regulated. But I think when we hear behavioural, we associate with bad.
Yeah,
yeah.
Where it's not bad.
Yeah.
We're talking about, and a lot of that time, the aggression and stuff is because they're so frustrated.
They're frustrated, yeah.
They're That's so frustrated.
The times when my little brother will show, will be when he's frustrated. You know, he wants to say something and he can't get out and he's kind of shaking and he'll make a noise. Ah, just like that.
In there.
Yeah, and it's so frustrating to watch. It breaks my heart looking at my little brother sometimes. Like, because especially when he wants something, because he'd be going in it and he's just making noise. And he's shaking with the anger. And you're just like, I just wish he could just say what, you know, I don't know how you deal with, like, yourself, my ma, like, fucking hell, like, it's a real struggle, like. And people, I don't know if people fully understand.
They don't.
Like, I see my ma going through with him, like, and it's really fucking stressful. Like my ma can't go to events. She can't go to any family deals. She can't do anything. She literally, her whole life has been on hold since she had him. Her whole life. And she's blessed with a great partner. And he's so, so bleeding good with the kids. Jesus Christ. But fucking hell, like, it's a real struggle.
People really, really gaslight parents and children with autism. And again, I believe that that's down to the government because it's easy to gaslight us, to make it out as if like, oh, they'll be grand. Like, that's the best one. Like, I just tell people, stop saying he'll be grand because this is a real thing I have to think about every single day. What's going to happen to him when I go? That's real life. That's not just this airy fairy thing. Like, that's real. And no sleep. You're sleep deprived. You're going through your own emotions. Being a parent is hard. But you kind of know the road you're going with it. You kind of know they go to school, they go to football. You kind of know, right? You're going along with your own friends. They're doing the same things. But all of a sudden now, you have a child with a disability and you're like, I didn't sign up for this. I don't know what to do with it. You have all these terminologies coming at you, all these forms to fill in, therapies to go to. You're worried, sick about them. All this thrown at you. A lot of people find that really difficult. That's without even having other children. You know, I remember like at one point, me and Terry nearly going our separate ways. Like he was really struggling because as men, it's a little bit harder. It's a little bit, they deal with things differently. They can internalize it. They might go to work. They might do other things to try and, you know, Terry was walking all the time and I was left at home with Harry because he was walking he was traveling to the UK. So he'd do his Monday to Thursday job and then he would do his fight nights in the UK. So we'd be flying out to Thursday, coming home on the Sunday and I would be there with the baby. He was in the back bedroom. Our relationship was literally like what you said, your whole life is on hold. So we couldn't even be a couple anymore. Like we couldn't go anywhere together. So we would take turns and that just drives a bigger wedge. And then it came to a point where it was like, we're either going to go our separate ways or we're going to pull together and we're going to get through this. And all the while, like, nobody really knew what we were feeling. Nobody really, really knew how difficult that was. And I remember resenting people for that. resented people not fully trying to understand. I remember people would say to me, join a group. There's great groups. And I'm like, but I don't want to join a group. I want me friends that are friends with me my whole life and to understand what I'm feeling and to be there, because everything changes. You're not available to people anymore. You can't go out with them. You can't just, and that's my life probably forever now.
Yeah, it's like I said, like you can't even just get them minded. Like it's not like you can just ask somebody, like let's say your ma or somebody close to you, if they hadn't got autism, you just say, will you mind the baby for the night or for a few hours? And like my ma can't do it. There's nobody that my little brother will go to, other than my ma and her husband. Like my ma, a couple of months ago, she never does anything for herself, and especially not now since the kids, like, and my little brother. And she said, fuck it. And she booked a hotel down the country there a couple of months ago for 3 nights. And I was like, oh, it's lovely. Like, she's now getting out of her comfort zone, bringing the baby down as well. So she, her and the 3 kids went down and her friend. And she came home the next morning. She couldn't deal with him.
Yeah.
You know, he was up all night. He's out of his comfort zone. So he didn't know what was going on. So he was up screaming and crying and pulling at things and just acting the bollocks because he didn't know what was going on. He's probably thinking, where the fuck are we? Like, you know, and sensory overload. And he's just like, oh, we might have to come home the next day. Like, and that's...
People don't realise that. People like, have that, no
that's
idea.
That's stressful.
Yeah.
Like,
so even when we go away, like, everything has to be down to a... So he is that anal and sensory bowel issues that... So his new obsession is rancheros, right? So his diet is really restricted. There's about 5 things on it, right? And when he loses one, he very rarely puts... He could lose 3 and maybe put a new one in, right? So that can be an issue. But there was a sticker on his rancheros today. And Terry says to me, he won't eat them because the sticker's on the outside. Mm. Wouldn't eat it. Mm. Exact same rancheros. It was a sticker on the and wouldn't eat it. So if it's not the right bread, if it's not cooked the right way, everything has to be, like, he'll only eat McDonald's chips. He'll only eat a certain toast with no butter. When we went looking at venues to get married abroad, and I really wanted to get married abroad, and everyone was like, you know, you can do it. Bring Harry with you, see how you get on. And we could have done it, but the stress we would have been under. Like, he couldn't drink a bottle. He wouldn't drink water for the whole time we were there because the bottles away are much softer than the bottles that we have in Ireland, the plastic, and he just wouldn't drink out of it.
Mm.
He just wouldn't. And now this year, the stage he's going to is he won't go outside the door. That's it. No, I'm not going. Mm. And literally, like, I brought him to an Easter egg hunt that he's going to since he's like 1. No, ran away. Ran hysterical. It's so funny because I feel like I've gone through a million lifetimes with him and a million different emotions, and I'm only starting to find my way now, that when I try to express it, I'm like, because I was like robot mode, it's like you're going through it, but you're just going through the motions. It's like, I suppose it's stress, it's trauma, it's everything. You're just trying to get through it. And you really have to adapt your whole life to them. There is no other way. And I'm real social. So that was hard. Like people will say, oh, how selfish of her. But I don't think it's selfish to want to have a little bit of, you know, a life for yourself.
No, you need it.
But it's not even that. It's the fact that you are so social. And now you actually can't be.
Yeah.
But, and it's not by choice. So that is a huge, drastic change in your whole life that you have to accommodate.
Yeah.
So I don't, any judgment passed on that is like, it's...
But they do just, judge it.
Of course.
And it's funny because you go, most people that have children, they're doing it till they're 18.
Mm-hmm.
But we're doing it for
forever.
Life.
Yeah.
For life. Like when he was initially diagnosed, it was like, okay, he'll go to mainstream school. And then it was looking like he wasn't going to mainstream school. And then I thought, okay, he might go to a class that would be beside a mainstream, like an inclusion class. And then I remember it came to the time where we had to get another assessment to see where he would go to school, what schooling. And it was a special school. And that was another hurdle I had to come over. And then I remember even the bus. I remember finding it really difficult to accept that Harry had to go on a bus to school and a bus home, and had to be in, like, I had to fight for a school place. A school is like down in Crumlin. I don't live in Crumlin anymore, but I had to take a school because it was the only school he was getting. I didn't have a choice to say, I'd like him to go to the local school where he'll make friends, or, you know, I'll see the other kids playing together. You know, and he'll just be standing there, and he loves kids. He loves, but obviously they can't play with him the way they play with each other. And that's heartbreaking to see. Every stage, like me and Terry are getting married this year and I know Harry's not going to want to walk down the aisle. And that, like, those little things feel so big because I know how much he loves us, like, and he knows how much we love him. But it's like, sometimes you feel so alone in it all. It's like nobody gets it. Do you know what I mean?
Definitely, yeah.
I'm whingy out.
it's a tough topic,
yeah. like this job late in life, and it is deep. And just going back to what you were saying about how specific they are, like, I remember thinking when my little brother was a baby, I remember thinking, how clever is that little cunt? My man had two bottles, one that you always drank of, and the other one was the exact the same bottle. But if she put milk into the other bottle and everything, we'd know what bottle is what, straight away.
Straight away.
So I used to be like in amazement at that. I used to be looking for the difference. Like, they're the exact same bottle. You give him the other bottle, he knows straight away. Little things like that, but like you were saying, how specific they are.
Oh, God.
It's mental. And going back to how they can buy and sell you, and people underestimate how smart kids with autism are. Like, you seen the video of my little brother and he was doing the sign language.
So I wanted to touch on that because Terrence's brother is non-verbal autistic and how do they communicate? And what I wanted to ask you, Aaron, was, you know, it's something that, yeah, it's always been around autism, but now I'm more aware of it. And now, like, the education side of it, it's there for you. And I'd imagine you'd have to go through that yourself as a parent. But we're constantly learning, so that means we're constantly adapting. And then I seen the video of his brother doing the sign language, and I swear to God, it's one of the most impressive things I've ever seen in my life. And the people who are teaching him the sign language, like, these people should be millionaires, do you know what I mean? Like, how hard of a job they must have if your own family can't communicate with the child, but you're able to teach him sign language and he's signing back. So then obviously that feeds into the family then. I'd imagine your ma's probably had to learn a bit of it.
But he doesn't give a bollocks at home. He knows he can get his own way.
Yeah.
That's the thing. So this is where I was getting at. I seen this video of him in school doing the sign language and I couldn't believe me eyes. Because at home...
nothing. Get your ma to do everything for him.
Oh, you want to... I mean, he can be very specific. Sometimes when he's having his bit of field or that, me ma's husband will be there giving him the field, and sometimes he'd have to chew the field for him. He's very specific with things like that. But sometimes he won't want me ma in the room, in the kitchen. So he goes, and he's pointing, figure it out. Yeah. He goes up and pull around the grill. Or if me ma's feeding him, he wants everyone else to. So he can be very specific like that. But just when I was looking at the video of him doing the sign language, I remember thinking, the little bastard, you're on the ball. Like, you can do that. You just chose nothing.
Yeah. And like, I think people, again, underestimate. Like, so when I have calls with Harry's teacher, who was absolutely talk about, like, the unsung heroes in this, or the teachers and the SNAs and the bus escorts, who literally, I don't know, many times I cried with teachers. They were the ones at the front door when I was, like, still dealing with trying to, I suppose, come to terms with it. I was trying to accept it. And they're the unsung heroes. But she'd ring every now and again. It's like, okay, so while everyone else is, kids are learning ABC and how to write their names, my son is learning how to zip up his jacket. My son is learning how to use a fork. So people think that autism isn't, because it's not physical. It affects my son's physicalities every single day. Can't get a car space for a child with autism, but our kids are like flight risks. How many children do we know of autism that run out of the house? So many. We go to a car park. Harry, now it's a lot better, but I remember this one time being out and I saw this little kid, and I'd say he was about 2 or 3 maybe, and they're coming down the escalator real fast, just running ahead of their ma, and the ma said, no, stop and wait. And the child stopped and waited, and I was like, where Harry couldn't do that. So he wouldn't be able to, they call it functional walking. So he wouldn't be able to walk along the road with you. He'd be distracted. He wouldn't be able to go from A to B. So he's in a buggy, or now we have a canine companion, and the canine companion taught him then now to walk. So even when he's not attached to him, he's able to walk constructively with you. He knows you're going. But I mean, that's the physical stuff. Like, you know, I said to Ma, my son might be able to walk, but he can't walk without me. He has to be guided everywhere he goes. I have to watch him. People don't see that side of it.
I think you explained the struggles perfectly there. Like, they might seem minor to somebody, but when you're living with that every day, like, I cannot put into words, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do it. And I think about my ma every day and my little brother, and I fear, like you said, for the future.
yeah,
and stuff like that. I don't know how she's at the doing it till now, like the unbelievable parents and the struggles that you see that they go through that not many people do see. And one of the biggest things for me about my little brother is I'm always worried about the future.
And you know, Terry, the reality is you are probably the people, the siblings that aren't talked about, because that's a heavy burden too. Because I had to have that conversation with Taylor. I had to say to her, when I'm not here, you have to do that. And whoever you choose to spend your life with, they're going to have to do it, because that's the way it is. Like, I don't have any more or smaller kids, but there is families that are like, the husband will have to go with one child to the zoo. Mm. And then the wife will have to stay home with the other child. And these families are nearly separated, because that's what autism can do. Now, I know that sounds like it, you know, there's so many beautiful sides of autism. The children are absolutely would light up your world. When Harry learned how to do a fork, when he learned how to put his crock on, you know, when he does, like, he slept in his own bed. He learned how to go to the toilet, which took us 3 to 6 months, and it nearly broke me to the point I had to go to the doctor. It was that bad. But when they do those little things, it's like heaven. Mm. It's so special. And they really teach you what life is about, because you have to connect to them at the most deeper part of your soul that no one else connects to, because you've no choice but to go into their world. Me and you can talk, but are you really taking it in? You can have a conversation with someone, but you have no choice but to actually go into that person's soul and see them, really see them. Not with your ears, not with your eyes, but heart to heart. And that's the magic these children have. And it's absolutely unbelievable. But for me, the reason why I talk about the struggles is because I feel like parents and children aren't supported enough in that.
Mm.
There really should be way more support. There should be more support for children, like, of siblings.
Mm.
Because I don't know, has your mom ever had that conversation with you?
Yeah. Yeah, that's like about if she passes. That's like a daily conversation. My mum will say that to me every time she sees me and I'm with the baby.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's very loving towards me. Like when I go up to my mum's gap, he's jumping at me and hugging me. And, you know, he's real attached to me.
Yeah.
But he's like that with all of us, really. But when he's doing that, my mum's like, now, you know, you're going to have to look after him now when we're gone.
Yeah.
And like, my mum's fucking in her 50s now. Like, and it's not even just that. I think about like when in another 10 years and he's 19, 20, and my ma's in her 60s, and I don't know what kind of person he's going to be as he gets older. Is he going to be aggressive? Is he going to be too big for me, ma, to mind? And, you know, there are things that I think about now when I think about, like, if I had the mind, I would 100% take that role, no problem, like,
yeah,
rather than see anything else happening to him, you know. But there are conversations that we'd have all, and my ma'd always say that to me, ah, it never happens to me, there's no use at.
You have know? To. Mm-hmm.
But I think the support, even with skills and stuff like that, that you mentioned, like I think a child that doesn't have autism or that struggle, you can nearly pick this local school that you want your child to go to.
For the support.
Yeah, but my little brother is out in a school out in Blanche. My ma lives at Cabra and she doesn't drive. So if they get a phone call to say that he's not well, they have to go on a bus straight out to Blanche, yeah, collect him, bring him all the way back in. Where if that was one of the other kids, she just flies around the corner to the school and gets the kid and brings them back.
Yeah.
It's just them kind of little struggles. And like you said, even as well about the bus and stuff like that, that's sad as well, isn't it? Like, it breaks your heart. Like.
Yeah. And you do come to terms and you find peace with it, because you literally don't have a choice. And like I said, at the time where me and Terry nearly were going our separate ways and we came together, we chose to do everything then together. So we became real united.
Mm.
And I remember Harry being so sick. So Harry suffered with his gut and he I was doing panto at the time. I'll never ever forget how I got through that year. He used to have to go on stage and inside I was heartbroken. He was self-harming himself to the point where he'd say, stand on a table and Terry said it was a wrestling move. He'd put his legs up and smack right down on his bum on the ground because he was trying to stop the pain, bite himself, pulling his hair out. And I was in A&E, I was going to all these places. I knew it was the go. But then people are like, oh, it's a behaviour. And I'm like, and then like what you said, you cross that line and you think, oh my God, is this it? Is autism taking us? Because you feel like you've conquered one part of autism and then next of all, something else happens, like puberty.
Mm.
Things that people don't talk about.
Mm.
Puberty. That happens. Mm. A lot of parents struggle with that because they don't understand it. So all these things are constantly changing. And Terry is honestly the best at. Like, if there's one thing I admire about him is his ability. Like, I could go anywhere in the world and he would mind Harry. I could leave him. He probably has a better system with Harry than even I do. He is absolutely amazing. And he loves the gym. Terry loves the gym, right? And I love slagging him. I have great banter with him. And he's like, go on, Terry, go in the gym. And I do a little voice and all like that. He's like, I don't even talk like that, but I do. He's like, go on, Terry, go in the gym today. And he said, the reason I go to the gym is because I want to be as strong as I can. Mm. Because he's a little bit older than me too. And he said, I want to live as long as I can for my son. And I want to be able to look after him when you can't, because I know you're not going to be physically able for him. And I was like, shouldn't have slagged him. Do you know, I was like, I don't know what to do here now because I'm actually being slagging him. And then he got real like raw and emotional. But again, there
how beautiful is that as well? Like,
oh, he's a great
dad. Like that he's thinking like that, although it's nearly sad at the same time that has to be a thought.
Yeah.
Him going to the gym is investing in his future.
Oh yeah, that's why he go. And then I was like, okay, then I can't give out to you if you go to the gym. I can't say that and go on the gym then. But like, he's such a great dad. And even like, there was times when we were in A&E and nobody could help us. And I literally felt so scared. This was probably one of the scariest times in my whole life where I thought, all these professors and doctors and nobody can help us. Like, nobody can help us. Do you know how scary that is? Like, you have a little child who's in chronic pain but can't tell me what's wrong with him. Like, I don't know what to do, and I'm going to A&E trying to get all these doctors to help me and they're just sending me home. And I remember saying to a doctor, you wouldn't leave a dog like that. You wouldn't leave a dog and you're telling me to give him Calpol. You actually wouldn't leave an animal in that much pain. And I just had this like breakdown. So you hold it together. I hold it together for as long as I can. And then when everything's kind of settled, then I lose my shit. And my ma's friend, when my ma wouldn't be there, she'd ring her friend, say, she's bad, get over to her. And she'd run over to me. She's walking, she's in our city woman as well, and she'd come over. And I lost it. And Terry got on his hands and knees and he held me. And he was like, we're in this together. I have you. Because he was going through it as well. But as a mother, sometimes you forget that. You forget about the man, my baby. And he was grieving. So that like solidified us together. That made me go like, I feel so alone and nobody understands me. But actually he does. He understands me. So why are we going our separate ways? Like as in mentally and emotionally going our separate ways. Why when I'm feeling this pain that only he can understand, why am I not going to it with him? But it's because I didn't want to burden him with it. Or like, I remember one time watching this RTE documentary. It was great. Watch it. And I was a little, he was 21 now. And I remember his mom and she was helping him still like, did you brush your teeth? Are you washing yourself? And everyone else saw great inspiration on it. And it was very inspirational. It was amazing. But I was like, I'm still going to be telling Harry I'm washing Harry at 21, more than likely. And I looked at Terry and Terry started like crying. Terry doesn't really cry. Like even when Harry was born, he didn't cry. He's not a crier, right? He's like, doesn't cry. And the tears start welling up and he like walked out of the room. And it's nearly when I see him crying, I feel pain for him because I love him. So like you're hurting for him because he's sad. Do you know?
Definitely, yeah.
That was a heavy session, wasn't it?
Yeah. I just want to, I just think that conversation is a conversation that needs to happen and that topic is a topic that needs to be discussed. That's why, like Calvin said there earlier on when we reached out to you 2 years ago, that's why we wanted to get you on, and especially my mom bloody loves you. Aww. She's always on me. Get her, how many times she texts us.
I know, yeah.
Get her on. She knows what we're going to do.
She texts the podcast page. Yeah. So she knows that we're going to need to see it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that topic needs to be discussed because I know what kind of nearly highlighting the negatives, but that needs to be said and that needs to be put out there. And hopefully then people who aren't in the same boat or the same position can really go, this is actually... Like, this is a big thing, like, and we need more support here and we need resources and stuff like that. So, look, thank you for talking about that.
But also, Terrence, I'm going to cut in here really quick as well because I remember putting up a video from an American YouTube of more kind of like late teens, early adults with autism and they were self-harming and behavioural issues. And the reason I put that up was because there's a lot of people when they say something, they'll reference a child who didn't speak till they were 8 or didn't speak till they were 3 or is now in college or is now an accountant. But there's also a lot of children who don't speak, who don't go to college, who are in residential care, who do self-harm. And that's the reality of it. So that also needs to be highlighted. That also needs to be that. That could be my journey. That could be our life. You never, ever give up hope. People say never give up hope. And I'm like, children or parents of children with special needs, they created the word hope. But there's a fine line between hope and acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
So I hoped, used to make these promises, be like, please God, now if he gets to 3, he'll talk. Please God, now if he gets to 5, he'll talk. But somewhere in that, I had to accept that he may never talk. And I had to accept that. Does that mean I gave up hope? No, I didn't. I'll always have hope for him. I'll always believe that he could and will and hopefully. But I've also made peace with the fact that he might not. And I have to learn how to help him navigate the world, communicating in the way he needs to. And I have to learn how to communicate his way. And that's the message I want to give. Mm. That's the message I want to give, that it's not all sunshine and rainbows, but that's the reality of this life. And that has to be, where there's lightness and there's happiness, there's also sadness and there's also dark times. And that's just the reality of it.
Mm-hmm. I think as well, as you said, like we're constantly, it's changing what we know about it. And we're trying to educate as many people as possible. Like we'd have a fair idea, like we can see signs and we might be able to like kind of understand it. But hearing you say this, that's the depths of it. Like this is what a day-to-day process looks like. And like you're giving your son his voice, you're the one who's speaking about it and you're highlighting it, and that's the reason why Terrence's ma wants you on, because you have this profile, you can understand what Terrence's ma is going through.
Yeah.
And you're giving her a voice then as yeah. well. And then the example you gave about the YouTuber there, and like they're saying, oh, like they can go on and do this, but it's a case by case basis. There's no clear path. There's no, like, if your child is doing this at 3 with autism, then they'll do this at 10. There's no clear path.
Yeah.
So it's a case by case basis, and that helps people understand it. It's not like it's not something that progresses and be like, you'll do this, and you do that. Because tomorrow could be different in 5 years, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it is something that requires a lot of resources because we don't understand it. We still don't understand it. People can tell you they do, but they don't, because it constantly changes.
Even as a parent, Calvin, I don't understand it. I actually don't understand it. Like when Harry was being Tyler trained, the initial first thing we had to figure out was, does his body actually know that he is gone? Is the brain signal that he's gone? So he knows, I'm forcing to go to Tyler. See the way we had that? Some children don't actually know that because it's a neurological thing. And when I said that to someone, they were actually blown away. They just stopped talking. They were like, because they didn't realize. I was like, it's actually a neurological. We don't even know what signals the brains are, like the fact that he can't hold a fork, or that affects the brain into the fine motor skills. I didn't even know that until it came to Tyler training.
Yeah.
And I'm a parent.
And that's the thing, it's on a spectrum as well. So people think they may know, but it's so broad.
Yeah.
You know, and there's like levels to it nearly that people, we actually don't know. So the likes of this, no, I know, and I do appreciate it. And Terrence said, thank you for it. Like, I can't imagine how hard that was for you to actually get that all out there. And now
it never feels hard, Calvin, to talk. Like, I love talking. Like, see this. This is my I love it. Love getting real deep into the nitty gritty. And like, I could sit here now and interview you and be like, now, tell me about this. And I'm a hairdresser by trade. So I love people. I love getting into their inner walk-ins. I love that real deep connection with a person. Like, that's the shit that does it for me. I'd say, like, in another life, I'd like to be like a psychologist or something, because I love to know the walk-ins and the emotions of people. And that shit turns me on. But what worries me is how people perceive it. And then when you're talking about something so vulnerable, it's when they take something and rip it apart. So it's not now, it'll be after. Oh Jesus, what did I say that right? What if they say this about? That's the problem.
Yeah, that's a natural feeling. Yeah. I feel that every fucking week.
Do you?
Every week. Did I butcher that? Did I say that? I should have said that. What if somebody takes that up wrong? But especially then when you speak about something so personal.
And you're so vulnerable.
So vulnerable. Yeah. And then if something does end up coming, you're almost, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the way I do personally look at it is, when I feel like that is, look, I feel vulnerable. But if that can help somebody out there, yeah, regardless of how I feel or how I sounded or how I think I sounded or came across, if it can help someone out there, well, yeah, that's all they're like.
But it also helps me.
Yeah.
Also is my therapy. Like people would say, you help me every day on my Instagram. All the women would come to me and say that or hug me and cry with me. And I'm like, no, you saved me. I was drowning. Yous were the ones that saved me. I felt like I'd nowhere to turn. I'd no one. But it was only when I started talking about it on my Instagram that it's those women that gave me the strength. So actually, they're all helping me. But I think the human instinct is 100 people will say nice things about you and some don't like them runners. And they're like, she said she doesn't like me runners. And then you think you don't like them anymore. So just think that's it. And some people are stronger than others when it comes to criticism.
Yeah. Definitely something we spoke about numerous times on this as well.
We've worked with Natasha before. So when we were organising this, you asked, can we put it in an email and send it to you? And I remember thinking like, we should go mad official with this. So I just reached out to Natasha directly and organised. I was like, Natasha, tell her we're the boys. We're not here to sting her. You can vouch for us. And we were having a laugh and a joke about this out there. And you cut the conversation and you said, I'll talk about that in there. And I remember thinking, what the fuck am I at the saying?
No, you didn't say anything. I just think that, like I said, things I've said will be taken out of context or people will take things and run a headline. And I'm like, so that is why I would always feel that I need to protect that. Do you know, I always feel that I might say something real innocent and then people will like turn it around and make it something that it absolutely wasn't. And I think initially when I was probably forced, let's say Dancing with the Stars out there, just be me, I was like, oh my God, these people aren't nice. Do you know what I mean? Like these things I don't know how to describe it, but it's like I trust too many people. And in the past few years, I've realized that like not everybody has pure intentions, because I genuinely like, I wouldn't be out to climb on someone's back to get somewhere, or I wouldn't ever hurt anyone. I mean, I can be a crazy skeety person every now and again, not saying that I'm like, because I am, but what you see is what you get with me. Like if you said to me, how are you feeling? Like I'd tell you how I was feeling and that's it. There's no hidden agenda or anything. But the longer I am around in life, there's a lot of people with hidden agendas. A lot of people want to take things and make it out to be something that it's not.
Yeah.
Or people want to make a story about you that's not true. Not true, but it's just twisted. And it's like, no, that's not what that meant. Do you know? And I've been a few microphones shoved in my face over the years with like getting caught on the hop and I'm like, eh, what? Do you know? So that's why.
So it's nothing personal is what you're saying.
I know where you live.
No, we appreciate you coming in, Aaron. And as I said, it couldn't have been easy for you. And like, I'm privileged that you come in because you said it to us. You've never done a podcast before.
Yeah.
So anytime anyone says something like that to me, I'm like, why the fuck are you picking us then? Do you know what I mean? So I was like, that then twists onto us. Like, we must be doing something alright. If people
feel. I'm very proud.
Thanks
of
very much.
Two fellas showing the world, working class people, you will not get better than us. You will not outwork us. You will not get more loyal people. And that's amazing just to see that, just to break down those barriers and those boundaries every single time. And I just think that's amazing.
Thanks very much, Erden. We really appreciate it, Erden.
Yeah.
Learn how to say my name.
I struggle. There's a few of them. There's Arden and Cardinal
and Shardon.
I'm sorry.
She just put a D on everything.
Yeah. I can't say my own name.
Yeah.
So I called you Terry a few times. Are you Terdence or Terry?
Well, Tardens or Terry, people mix it up.
Oh, so funny, right? Because so Terry's Terry, right?
Yeah.
But he said the people from town on the north side of town say Terry. You say it. Say your name.
Terry.
There's a little tar to it.
Yeah.
Where the people on the south side say Terry.
I know people that say Terry though. Yeah. Like that. Yeah.
You kind of say Terry, I think.
Do we? Yeah. Terry.
Yeah. Terry.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, a little.
Yeah.
Bit.
So you're more on the north side than you say.
Yeah, we struggle with the R's, don't we? How do we turn an R into a D? They're nowhere near each other.
So see if I'm somewhere like a fishland, they're like, so what's your name, your date of birth, whatever, I'm obviously, so T-E, I'll spell my name straight away.
I won't say it.
Because when I say it, I say Tardens, they're like, huh? You know, I'm like, then I'm like Terrence.
So would you know? See, you can say it.
Yeah, but that's a mouthful. No,
it's not.
I'm
really
putting 14 syllables in there.
So if nicknames, would you say Mika or Miko?
Mika. Yeah.
Don't say
you put an O on it.
Don't say that.
Yeah, a lot of times over the south side we'd say O behind things.
Cut the whole episode. Yeah.
It's going so well.
We definitely have different
lingo.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
You have a char going on, a D.
Right, well, I think we're towards the end there.
If you haven't, you want to plug, and you have coming up that you want to...
The house coats, they're in there.
I actually have jumpers. So I have loungewear jumpers, and they have embroidered in them, love needs no warts.
Brilliant.
Because love does needs no warts. And this year, I will be in the Tree Olympia Panto called Freezing. Up the flats, I hope I get that line again. So that's definitely a line in the panto. Up the flats and they all love it. Yeah. Hope I do it justice. And then I have my DFI beds. Did you know I'd create my own beds?
No, but I won't.
Come here. Think about it. I didn't sleep for years, created a house coat, and then I got a bed deal. I was like, see? Silver lining and all that. So yeah, busy with walking.
Flat out.
Flat out, love it.
Yeah, and as I said, thanks for coming in. We really do appreciate it. And yeah, that's it, Terry.
That's a wrap.
All right, take us out on.
Boom.
Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your whip in it now. Fill your body up in. Work it hard and long. When you finish that.
The Hip Knocker.
Go down. Go down. Go down. Go down.